So welcome to the next edition of our Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Bob Thompson. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Adrian.
So, Bob, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about the work that you do?
Certainly. Well, I research, write, and speak about a topic called customer-centric business management. And this is something I've been doing since 1998.
Okay.
And I also manage the Customer Think Online community, which I launched in 2000. Mm-hmm. And we currently serve about 1 million people each year on all different facets of customer-centric business.
Fantastic. Now, Bob, you've just written a book called Hooked on Customers, The 5 Habits of Legendary Customer-Centric Companies. Can you tell us a little bit about how it came about? And so what's the purpose of the book?
Certainly. Well, the book is really the culmination of 15 years of research and thinking about this topic of customer-centric business. And my goal was to help, first of all, to clarify what it meant,
yes.
which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about because it is a pretty fuzzy term. But more importantly, what I was trying to do was to help identify what are the organization behaviors or what I call habits that differentiate the top-performing companies. Or what's kind of the secret sauce of what makes them such great companies to work with if you're a customer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, let's step back. Before we get into the book, let's step back and in your experience, I mean, like you referred to customer centricity or customer centric as a term about being a bit fuzzy. But in your experience, what does being customer centric really mean?
Well, I'll give you my definition, and then we can talk about what it means in the market, because I really try to differentiate the two. I mean, my simple definition, I've got a more formal one in the book, but in simple terms, a customer-centric business creates value for customers in a way that eventually creates value for the company and its stakeholders. You know, it's a very simple proposition. We're trying to create loyal relationships. We're going to do it by creating value, and we're going to take a long-term perspective.
Okay.
Now, in practice, you know, in the market, there's a lot of different ways of looking at that term.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you give me a bit of an understanding of what you mean in terms of the broad interpretation that we see in the market and some of the challenges that broad interpretation leads to? I mean, because that's the thing is like a lot of people try and own this type of space, but there's not much agreement, I would suggest.
No, there's no agreement at all. I had quite a discussion about some of the different points of view in the introductory chapter of my book. I mean, it really ranges. It's all over the map. I mean, you find people who say, look, customer centricity is a really bad idea. And the reason it's bad is because it means you should do whatever the customer wants, no matter what it does to your business. You know, if they tell you to jump, you just say how high.
Right.
So that's one extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And the other extreme I would say is that it's all about extracting value from customers. Like, I don't really care what they want, but I'm being customer centric because instead of focusing on products, I'm focusing on customers and I'm going to sell them more products.
Right. Okay.
Those are maybe a little bit cynical, but in fact, they're significant portions of the market that feel that way about it. That's why I spent a fair amount of time trying to understand, you know, what's really different about these different points of view.
Mm-hmm.
But in broad terms, the market seems to range from this sort of targeted marketing and selling concept, which is part of what CRM was about,
mm-hmm.
to at the other extreme, it's really more about value creation and delivery, which is really what the more innovative and creative firms do.
I mean, I guess you're also going to mention that word value a couple of times. And I also find that quite an interesting kind of term because value is a very subjective term. And
absolutely.
You look at it from different perspectives and you're like, value for who? And that causes creates another sort of access or another sort of dynamic in the conversation.
That is absolutely right. In fact, I could just as easily have called titled my book Customer Value Management or something along those lines, because really what you're talking about in effectively run customer-centric firms is it's two-way value management. You're trying to do two things at the same time. You're trying to to find the right delivery of value to customers that's going to motivate them to be loyal, but you're also trying to find the right value to the company. And unless you get that somewhat in balance over, you know, a long period of time, you can't stay in business, mm-hmm. right? If you're just taking from customers and not giving, they're going to leave. If you're just giving and never getting value back, you're going to go out of business.
Yeah.
So it's really about this two-way value management, as I see it.
Okay. I mean, so, and I guess in the nature of the book is rather than getting hooked on definitions, as it were, I mean, as you're saying, that you talk about five habits of legendary right. customer-centric companies. So it's almost like, well, actually, let's kind of take the lead from people that are doing good things rather than kind of getting held up with, you know, defining where the start is.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been through, and I know you've seen this too, Adrian, there's been lots of definition wars in the industry. You know, let's define CRM or CEM or, you know, you pick the topic, innovation. And it seems like there's so much effort expended to try to get the one definition in the sort of the chattering class.
Yes.
but also it's internally that people think that because they have defined or declared, I'll just say declared, that they have a strategy to delight their customers or to have great experiences or whatever it might be, that somehow magically it's going to happen. And so what I really wanted to do was to not get hung up on definitions, because companies do define customer-centric business differently, mm-hmm. but really look at what is it that they do, and that's what the habits are about.
Excellent. So, I mean, that's a great sort of segue into my sort of next question I wanted to ask, was that you go into the book and you talk about these five habits. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about those habits and how they actually all fit together?
Sure. Well, first of all, the reason I use the term habit is something you do almost unconsciously. You know, about half the time during the day, the things that we do, we don't consciously think about it. We just do them, whether it's what we eat for breakfast or our daily routine of checking email, commuting to work. I mean, our business and professional lives, if you had to make a conscious decision about every single thing you did, you could not function.
Sure.
That's what a habit is. And habits get ingrained because you do something, you get a positive feedback, and you say, that was good. I want to keep doing that. And you eventually it becomes this sort of wired behavior. It's very difficult to change. And so I use the term habits because I want people to understand that these organizational behaviors are not a program. It's not a project. It's not, you know, this is what we're doing in Q1, then we move on. It has to be part of how the organization operates. Mm-hmm. So with that said, what are the habits? Well, I'll just briefly describe each of them, and then we can dig deeper as you like.
Sure.
Habit number one is listen, which means understanding what is it that customers really value.
Yeah.
That's the term we just talked about. So it is a fuzzy term. What is value? Well, you know, the only person who has a vote on that on the customer side is the customer, and they can consider value the products, experiences, pricing, all sorts of intangibles. And you have to do the right research to understand what they value. And secondly, you need to listen to their feedback as they experience working with your company. So that's what listen is about.
Yeah.
Habit number two is think, which to me is kind of a collaboration of man and machine. It's a way of saying ultimately business people have to make decisions, but they can certainly use analytics and various tools to make sound more fact-based decisions, not just based on history or rumor or whatever, just doing things the way that they've always been done. So thinking objectively is very important mm-hmm. to top firms. Mm-hmm. Habit number three is to empower employees, give them the resources, give them the authority, and kind of turn them loose to do the things that they need to do to serve customers and to please them.
Sure.
Number four is to create. This is about innovation, creating new value for customers. And the top firms do this without customers explicitly asking. So if you understand, like, say, Steve Jobs is famous for, or he's known, according to the rumor mill, that you know he didn't like my market research and didn't do it. But that's not true. He just didn't go out and say, what kind of phone do you want?
Sure.
What he did was he understood what people's needs and desires were. They wanted something that was cool, functional, but brought a lot of different things together. And he took those needs and desires and created something that really turned the world on its end. And that's this idea of creating value without necessarily customers asking you for it.
Yeah.
And habit number five, I'll put this one, to me, it's the most important because it really sets a stage for a lot of change within the organization. It's delight. You know, the top performing companies believe that they should always be pushing, mm-hmm. trying to do more, exceeding their customers' expectations, not just doing just barely what we promised we'd do.
Okay. Now, I mean, in the book, you go into these habits in a lot more sort of depth and provide all sorts of examples about how different companies, particularly leading companies, implement all these different habits. But in your experience, I mean, which of these habits do you think companies find it the hardest to implement and get right?
Well, I think it's the last two. I mean, these are the two that tend to be the least well-developed. Create and delight is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's really, I mean, this takes companies that are willing to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, innovation, I write about Intuit as one of my favorite examples. Innovation involves risk, and you need a culture of risk-taking that, in some cases, rewards failure
mm-hmm.
and makes it okay to fail. In fact, doesn't even talk about it as failure because it's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
So Intuit really takes these two ideas and puts them together. They have a program called Design for Delight, and it focuses the entire company on creating new solutions that will really put a smile on their customers' faces. And you think about it, we're not talking a smartphone here. You're talking about boring financial software, things like QuickBooks,
yep.
TurboTax, and things like that. This is not sexy stuff, and yet they have been a very top-performing company because they've organized around those two habits, create and delight.
Okay, but I guess they've got the listen, the think, and the empower kind of all together before they even started on the create and the delight.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at their history, they had a very progressive voice of customer program. Uh-huh. They used a Net Promoter Score, mm-hmm. and you know, there's a lot of debate about the pros and the cons of it, but they got a lot of value out of the Net Promoter Score. But they hit the wall. They found that basically what the Net Promoter Score helped them do was identify the problems that needed to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And after they fixed the problems, they found that they still did not have customers that were delighted.
Sure.
And they really had to focus the company on innovation. So, yeah, there's some foundational stuff. I mean, if you don't do any research and you don't have a clue about your customers and you don't get any feedback – it's hard to make good decisions about what you're going to do with the other five, other four habits.
Okay. I mean, so if this is a bit of a journey, as it were, I mean, I assume that it makes completely logical sense that you would start by listening. But do you find that there are some companies that they get caught up in the fever, as it were, and they just jump into some of it and don't necessarily build on the foundations?
Well, yeah, and you know, business is very complicated, and I don't mean to suggest that there's this kind of very neat, orderly progression, because it doesn't work that way in practice. In fact, you see innovative startups that will come in with a killer idea.
Mm-hmm.
They have done little or no customer research, but they have somebody that's passionate about their product. They kind of think or sense that there's a market opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and they go for it.
Right.
And so they could come in with something that's very, very innovative that their customers absolutely love and, you know, in effect kind of start at this stage four,
right.
Sort of being inspired by their customers. The problem is if they don't develop listening skills, that they may never grow into a sizable company because ultimately you have to enhance products, you have to come up with new things, and this killer product that you started with is not going to take you forever.
So
there can be kind of moving up and down this evolutionary maturity model that I've developed.
I mean, yeah, so tell me a little bit more about that, because actually the thing is not just about the habits. There is this, the end, towards the end of the book, you talk about the stages of a customer-centric journey, and you alluded to then just that there's a number of stages. I mean, how many stages do you think there are, and can you tell me a little bit more about them?
Yeah, I developed, and this is kind of a maturity model with four stages. I call them targeted, responsive, engaged, and inspired.
Uh-huh.
And all five habits are at work across all four. But as you get to the later stages, you see more of the habits four and five, meaning create and delight.
Okay.
So let me just try to quickly explain how this evolution works, in my opinion.
Okay.
And by the way, I developed these out of both some quantitative studies as well as doing lots of interviews to see how companies are approaching this idea of customer centricity.
Okay.
So most companies are at stage one.
Mm-hmm.
They think they have customers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been in business for quite a few years, you know something about your customers and you want to sell more to them.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. That's every company needs to do that. But it may leave customers thinking, well, what's in this for me? You know, you're just continuing to market to me and cross-selling and all this stuff. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why CRM has met with some limited success, because it's been too much about how the company is going to profit from their customer base.
Mm.
You get to stages two and three, it's really more about listening and understanding how your customers are experiencing your product, services, or interactions with your company,
mm-hmm.
and developing better, more engaging experiences.
Okay.
And so this takes you beyond the, you know, how do I get sort of an immediate benefit from direct marketing to, hey, how's our relationship going? How can we make it better? How can we create more of an emotional bond? And then stage four, which I've already alluded to, is really about being inspired by your customers, not just reacting to what they ask you to do,
sure.
but to do things that solve problems before they ask.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Apple iPhone is probably the best example mm-hmm. of that in the world.
Okay. So if I was to say to you, I'm an executive, I'm listening to this podcast, or I'm reading the notes of it, and I think that we need to either start a transformational kind of journey, or we want to kickstart our own sort of customer experience initiatives in our company. What would you say, what would be the top tips that you would give to them and say, I think you should do this, and or do this, or do this?
Well, I mean, it's hard to...
It's hard to answer the question because it's so kind of such a broad question.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I would say before I answer your question is that I think it's common to, and I get this question quite a bit, which is why I want to just spend a moment on it, Adrian.
Sure. Sure.
Is that, you know, there's this notion that, well, let's just find the one thing we should do.
Yeah.
You know, what's the one most important thing? And then we'll do that. And if we don't get to the rest of them, then it's going to be okay because we did the most important thing.
Of course, yeah.
And that's like choosing between your left arm and your right arm. You know, it doesn't work. You need both arms.
Yes.
So I want to just make that point before I say, yes, there is kind of a logical place to start, and that's going to your customers, understanding what's on their mind. What is it that motivates them? How are you doing with them? That's this listen concept.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, well, great, you know, I did the most important thing, so, you know, hey, I didn't quite get to anything else and it's probably still going to be okay, it's completely wrong.
Sure.
You know, you have to act. And when you think about what think, empower, and the other habits entail, it's about taking this information that you've collected mm-hmm. and doing something with it, making the right decisions, treating your employees in a way that helps them deliver these great experiences that you say you want to deliver, innovating, delighting your customers, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you really need to think about them holistically and not get hung up on what's the most important. Although it's certainly fair to say that listen is a good starting point.
Okay. I guess it's my job to kind of pose again, reasonably broad and quite difficult questions to kind of tease people's responses kind of out. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's like, if I go back and sort of, summarize kind of what you were saying, I mean, it's like, as you say, it's, if you're a startup and you don't have an established customer base, then yeah, maybe to start at the innovative end of the habit scale, which is around, you know, create and what's the fifth one? Create and delight.
Right.
But it's, if you've got an established customer base, then actually maybe it might be more wise to start at the listen stage.
I think that's fair. But, you know, I would say even whether you're a startup or you're a new business that wants to get into markets that you're not in, that, you know, I think of listening as kind of having a strategic component, which is really about doing market research.
Sure.
And as well as a tactical or feedback component. So even startups can do market research. They can figure out, you know, what are the problems that consumers care about if they're trying to build a new product. So I don't think there's really any good excuse for having no idea what your potential customers would want, even if you're a brand new company.
Okay. So Bob, is there anything that we've missed from the book that you'd like to add before I give you my final question that I always ask everybody at the end of these interviews?
Well, the main thing I would say is that to make sure that these turn into real habits is not just a good ideas on some PowerPoint slides. You have to set up the right metrics. I mean, they really need to be key performance indicators and not just a whole bunch of indicators.
Mm-hmm.
And back them up with reward systems. That's both tangible things like money and bonuses and commissions, but also the recognition of who are the people that get promoted, get recognized,
right?
Who are the stars of the company? And when you take this reward system with the right metrics to reinforce these behaviors, that's how you create habits. If you don't do that, then you end up with another program that looks good, it sounds good, but a year later, nothing has changed.
Yes, or it gets superseded by another initiative and people then start rolling their eyes or raising their eyebrows about another new initiative off the block.
That's right.
So, Bob, my final question is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug, my friend?
Well, yes. I would encourage people to visit the Customer Think community. I mean, this is the source of, you know, great dialogue and conversations and insight, and it's been a huge influence on my book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free resource. Doesn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
Come visit the site, sign up for our newsletters. We have some of the world's best thinkers on this topic, including yourself. So thank you very much, Adrian, for being a part of our community.
You're too kind. Thank
you. And, you know, why not take advantage of this? Because, you know, the book is really trying to distill what I've learned looking back over the last 15 years. But the leading edge is constantly changing,
mm-hmm.
and that's really the purpose of the community. So join in and be part of this wonderful customer-centric business community.
Fantastic. Bob, that's been great and really interesting. And I wish you now get all that written up and edited up and linked up and give the book a big shout-out, as well as the Customer Think community, which is customerthink.com, as it sounds. And, well, thank you for your time and insights today. That's been great.
Thank you, Adrian. I really enjoyed it.